The victims, 23-year-old Damian Tillman, 27-year-old Brandon Rollins, and 30-year-old Kevin Springfield, were best friends, getting together, as they often did, to go fishing.
He was my baby. I love him to death.
You've got three best friends. What is more wholesome than going fishing near Frostproof on a Friday night? And that's what they were doing.
All three young men discovered at a crime scene so horrific, so shocking, Sheriff Grady Judd himself described it as a massacre, one of the worst he's ever seen. The bodies of Brandon Rollins, Damian Tillman, and Kevin Springfield, three buddies who left on a fishing trip and would never make it back.
I was looking for my son. It was a mess. I found my son. I was holding him. He was telling me what happened.
The sheriff says he will not stop until these killers are caught.
I'm angry with whoever would do this to these folks. They're nasty, evil, ugly, mean, murdering people.
Now to a news alert out of Polk County, where Sheriff Grady Judd just gave us an update on the investigation into the shooting deaths of three fishermen in Frostproof. He says deputies have arrested three people, two men and a woman, in connection to those deaths. This week, the reward for information into what happened during a fishing trip Friday night increased to $30,000. The sheriff has called what he saw there one of the worst crime scenes he's ever seen. The man he says pulled the trigger had hundreds of felony charges.
TJ, someone who his criminal history should shock your conscience, it does mine. He's a thug. He's a criminal. He's pure evil in the flesh.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
I'm Lauren.
I am Ken.
And this is Paradise After Dark.
Paradise After Dark is a bi-weekly podcast covering true crime,
unsolved mysteries,
missing people,
urban legends, and the dark side of the Sunshine State.
But first, if you'd like to support our show, please subscribe to us at our Patreon page at patreon.com/Paradise After Dark Podcast.
On Patreon, you'll have access to bonus episodes, our spinoff show, Vacation Edition, discounts on our merchandise, and more.
And much, much more.
If you have a question, a Florida case suggestion, or you'd just like to chat, please email us at paradiseafterdarkpodcast@gmail.com.
And in other news, don't forget us, CrimeCon's coming up. Getting excited.
Yep, October 30th to November 1st in Orlando, Florida.
Happy Halloween!
Ken's excited.
I'm excited. Excited. I'm going to like dress up. You know what? I'm thinking for my costume, I'm just going to wear crime tape.
I don't think that. Like nothing, line. Nothing but crime tape?
Nothing but crime tape. But like only like 2 feet of it. I'm just going to need 2 feet. I'm going to do like a little underwear thing of crime tape.
Maybe not do that. No.
Come on. So Lauren, tonight we're doing something just a little bit different.
Yeah, it is a little bit different. As in when I started writing the outline for this case less than 2 weeks ago, no one had been arrested yet. It was a triple murder and out of Polk County up in Frostproof, Florida. And I've been writing this outline in real time, checking every day, seeing what's happening, adding to the outline. And it's as current as today, which is July 30th.
As of this recording.
So hopefully we're as up to date as we can possibly be. And maybe we'll come back with an update later.
I'm hoping we do.
But I started it because it was such a horrific crime. And it wasn't, like I said, nobody had been arrested yet. And I was like, oh my gosh, we have to get this out there. We have to do this because they didn't have any suspects or anything at first. So, but fortunately, they have arrested some people for this triple murder. And we're going to tell you all about it.
Well, let's go ahead and get into it. And as we talk about it, just understand that all parties involved are innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
As always.
So, first of all, let's talk a little bit about where it occurred. It occurred in Frostproof. Now, Frostproof is a city in Polk County, Florida. It's located in Central Florida, and the city has a total of about 2.5 square miles. And as of the year 2018, the population was only 3,273 people. And that's actually pretty small. I mean, you figure 2.5 square miles.
Yeah, that's a small town.
And a very small population. And the town was established in 1850. Now, prior to being named Frostproof, the town was named Keystone City. However, after being confused regularly with Keystone Heights, which is a city in near Jacksonville, North Florida, the name Frostproof was coined. And the name of the town was a marketing ploy to convince potential landowners that the town has never had and never would have a frost that could destroy the large citrus-driven economy. However, as always, only a couple years later, frost killed almost all the citrus in Frostproof. So
there's a little trivia for you.
Yeah, the name kind of lies a little bit, folks.
So Grady Judd, a man so well known that he has his own Wikipedia page, is the sheriff of Polk County. Now, according to this Wikipedia page, Judd started working for the Polk County Sheriff's Office in 1972 as a telephone communicator. As the first employee there under the age of 21 in the department's history, he was required to get his father to purchase his ammunition. At the age of 27, he attained the rank of captain, supervising 44 employees, all of whom were older than he. He was elected as the sheriff of Polk County in 2004 and re-elected in 2008, 2012, and 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout his career, Judd has earned a plethora of awards and professional recognitions, including a Good Citizenship Medal from the Sons of the American Revolution in 2015 and a National Anti-Bullying Recognition Award from the School Safety Advocacy Council in 2014. Sheriff Judd has taught as an adjunct professor at both the University of South Florida and Florida Southern College. He's a Polk County School Board Hall of Fame inductee, a past recipient of Polk State College's prestigious Distinguished Alumni Award, the 2008 Boy Scouts of America Distinguished Citizen Award, Protect Our Children Junior Award, the 2013 Callow's Leader in Online Child Protection Award, as well as the 2013 Church Women's United Human Rights Award.
So it's safe to say he probably has a trophy room.
Probably. He's a graduate of the FBI National Academy, the Senior Management Institute for the Police, and the FBI Law Enforcement Executive Development Seminar, and the FBI National Executive Institute. He was a participant of the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs and Law Enforcement Exchange Program. It is my strong conviction that God has blessed Polk County because we have the faith-centered, justice-loving, honor-protecting, people-caring sheriff. To simply put it, we are just downright proud that Grady Judd is ours. Jay Dennis, lead pastor at the First Baptist Church at the Mall, said during a speech at Sheriff Judd's fourth swearing-in ceremony in 2017. Sheriff Grady Judd just announced on July 11th that he will be stepping up for his fifth term as sheriff. There will be no elections because no one has dared to even challenge him.
Nobody.
So Judd gained publicity as the sheriff who tells it how it is. In 2006, when asked why his deputy shot a suspected cop killer 68 times, he responded, "That's all the bullets we had." So here's a clip from ABC Action News. They made an awesome clip of just some of the statements that Sheriff Judd made in the year 2019.
You want to go and play it? Do we have it? We actually have a clip on that?
Yep.
Listen, are you ready for this?
This guy's grinning like he just ate lemons.
You can't make this stuff up. Are you kidding me? Come on, girl. You drive a Cadillac. You steal toys from kids.
If you commit vicious crime, like has occurred, you need to go to jail first. He intended to have a gunfight, and we gave him a gunfight. We don't choose to shoot people. They choose for us to shoot them. And if you choose for us to shoot at you, we're going to shoot at you a lot. That's a guarantee. Tell them, I'm not interested. I'm calling the sheriff's office. My dog's going to bite you. We highly recommend that when we're out looking for you, that you immediately post all of your information that you can on Facebook, Instagram, tweet it out however you want, because that helps us. Say, hey, man, are you going to come pay me that $63? Did you hear me? You need to not only tell them that they're out of their mind, you need to vote them out of office. Well, my first question is, why aren't you home in bed with your parents in the other room getting ready for school in the morning?
This guy is just a nut.
You know, I don't know if a guy thinks he's Smokey Bear, but all he is a jailbird. He's locked up.
This guy wants uniforms so much, we gave him one, an orange uniform.
He's evil in the flesh. You're not supposed to saddle up your horse in Polk City, ride it all the way to town in Lakeland drunk. If you do, we're going to put you in jail for DUI on a horse. Not a tough choice. Witness, second-degree felony charges. Witness, second-degree felony charges. He said he liked handcuffs and blindfolds. Well, the good news for him is he got his handcuffs. Did you hear me? We're not going to have a good sense of humor if you make us do all this work to track you down. And we plan to send them to state prison where they don't need a cell phone. You know, my detectives are the best, and we will come after you and track you down. Just help a brother out here. You can have smart criminals. Not often, but you can. We have a place for you in the county jail. They'll turn up. Bad pennies always do. Don't feel like it's like, whoo, I committed all this crime and they only got me for this. You need to be going, what else are they going to come up with next? Because we are trailing them like good hound dogs in hunting season. These people are nuts, because there's nothing that warms our heart more than to file more criminal charges against them. The only thing we didn't see was a monkey wearing a top hat lassoing the rats. We will chase you to the ends of the earth. This is like deja vu. Did you hear me? His mama drove him there to have sex. I mean, what do you say to your son when you're letting him out of the car there? Have a good time. Be safe. Make mama proud. And if they want to fight in court, that's what we hire lawyers for. We do the happy dance every time we arrest one of these. We're just not having that in this county. They come to us. It's just like fishing in a barrel. But they don't realize that barrel's full of piranha. That Grady Judd is crazy over there, and he's going to get you. Tyrese will look good in handcuffs, and you will look good with green cash from Crime Stoppers. She may be too pretty to work, but she's not too pretty to go to jail. It is an absolute, unequivocal train wreck. But she is a thief with a capital T. We don't need more laws. We need the people to follow the ones that are there. But I can tell you this, the message is clear. You violate the law, you go to jail. It's pretty simple. You hear me, criminals? You're being recorded. No tricks and no treats.
There's always room in the Crossbar Hotel.
All right, you need to get a clue, too. You just have to see this stuff to believe it. Do you want to be in a store shopping with a bunch of hooligans in there? Did you hear me? We're going to lock you up. Merry Christmas. Welcome to Polk County, Florida.
So, needless to say, Sheriff Grady Judd does not fuck around.
No, he does not, as most criminals know. And that is why this year, on July 18th, when he announced that he was hunting the person or persons who massacred 23-year-old Damian Tillman, 30-year-old Kevin Springfield, and Brandon Rollins, who was 27, on the evening of July 17th, the entire country did tune in. Everybody was ready to see what's happening. Exactly. Now, the three friends were murdered just moments after gathering together for some night fishing at Lake Streetie and Frostproof. This is a horrific scene, Judd said, at his news conference Saturday near Lake Streetie, where the bodies were found. I've been to a lot of murder scenes in my life, and this ranks among the worst. He said the men were beaten and shot. Judd said this is what investigators believed happened. Okay, so we're going to give you kind of a quick rundown of initially what they thought all occurred.
Right.
Tillman arrived at the lake first to meet his friends for night fishing for catfish. When Rollins and Springfield arrived, they saw Tillman being beaten, and the attackers began shooting them. So it's kind of that was their first, like, you know, when the investigators get there, they have to sort of pick the scene apart and say,
right,
this is what we think happened. And obviously, we still to this date don't know
exactly what happened, but
exactly
we have a better idea now.
Yeah.
So Brandon Rawlings was still alive when the attackers left, and he called his father for help. His father rushed to the fishing spot about 10 minutes away, but forgot his cell phone in the hurry to help his son. So he drove to a nearby convenience store, and the clerk helped him reach authorities. But by the time they arrived, Rawlings had died. "I was just so upset last night. I just didn't know what to do," said Cyril Rawlings, the father of Brandon.
Well, can I interject something here? I want to make sure that there's a lot of speculation about what happened with the father and the cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, well, why didn't he just use one of the other cell phones? You're in this situation, and two things I can see why you'd want it. One, you don't know what just transpired if the people that created the scene are still there. So you don't know if you're still in there. You're panicked. You saw your son. You reach for your phone. You're not thinking, oh, well, let me check everybody's phone and see if somebody has one. You just react and you get in the car and leave. I know he got sort of chastised by the media, and not necessarily the media, but a lot of people said, why didn't you just look for phones? That's a tough situation to be in. I mean, you roll up and your son has been beaten and is on the edge of death.
So he told WFLA 8, "We heard some background and they fuss and all that, but I left. I went out there. When I got there, I was looking for my son. It was a mess. I found my son. I was holding him. He was telling me what happened, but I was too shocked to know what was going on." Sheriff Judd told reporters, "There's been some question why didn't the dad use the son's phone from there," Judd said. "Well, I don't know whether or not he looked for it, but he probably couldn't find it because we had a difficult time finding it ourselves." So the dad probably couldn't find anyone else's cell phone.
Okay. Okay.
So Sheriff Judd wouldn't say what information Rawlings shared with his father before he died, but they did have a conversation. He also did not say whether authorities have identified any suspects and wouldn't speculate on whether the victims knew their attackers, although he did suggest it wasn't a random attack. The Polk County Sheriff's Department offered a $5,000 reward for any information leading to the capture of the killers right off the bat.
Yeah, that's kind of odd.
That is kind of odd. Like, within 24 hours, they had this reward up.
Ready to go.
"You don't just stumble upon somebody out there. This is a dirt road, a clay dirt road, way out in the middle of what we call God's country, on the way to a nice little fishing lake. It's not like there's a lot of people around here. As you can see, it's a cow pasture and lakes," Judd said. Now, Roland's girlfriend, Jessica Steenson, told WFLA 8 that the sheriff promised to find the killers, that he would not stop until justice is served for them three boys, my boyfriend and his two best friends, she said. Dottie Payton, Roland's mother, said she too wants justice to be done. "I want it to be served the right way, and I'm sure they're out there watching and seeing what's going on, and they need to come forward," she said.
Now, on July 21st, the reward for information was up to 30 grand. So this a couple days, they've increased it from the 5 grand initially up to 30,000.
Yes.
Of the up reward, Sheriff Judd said, "Look, there are people out there that'll give up their brother for $100. You know, that's actually a pretty true statement, too. I know some people that would toss their brother under a bus for $100. This is $30,000 cash, no taxes. We don't even have to know who you are. We just need information." As he announced the reward, he told reporters that among the hundreds of tips authorities have received, some were actually promising and others were just ridiculous. Now, Sheriff Grady Judd also said that the investigators were reviewing surveillance video from nearby homes and businesses. See, that's one thing about the cameras nowadays and technology. So some of the investigators get a little bit of a boost because if you know where something happened, you can start looking at cameras and local businesses and things like that. What drive by here, there. So, you know what I mean? Like, if you're, they can see all the different cars and stuff. Now, the sheriff's office also said that there's no evidence the killings were drug related or domestic in nature, and that family members are cooperating with investigators. Now, there were no items of value missing within the pickup truck at the scene, so robbery didn't seem to be a motive. Now, we don't see obvious reasons for theft, Judd said. We don't see signs of a drug deal gone bad. We don't see signs of a domestic violence event. So we don't know why the murders occurred. Now, me personally, I'm going to go ahead and admit, I originally thought that it had to be a drug deal gone bad.
That was my first thought, too.
Now, I wasn't sure if it was that, but I thought that maybe, like, these guys showed up to go fishing, because I didn't realize, you know, we didn't have all the breakdown.
Yeah.
I thought maybe they rolled up on a drug deal going down.
Yeah.
Because in Polk County, maybe not Frostproof so much, because remember, Frostproof in and of itself is kind of small, but Polk County.
There's a lot of drugs. Yeah.
There's a lot of drugs. I mean, they're pretty methed up, if you know what I mean. Things are methed up there. So I honestly thought that was the case. So I wasn't sure how to take this, but I'm.
Well, there was a lot of speculation about what had happened. Like, how do three young men just be brutally murdered out while they're out fishing?
Exactly.
It just was so off the wall, kind of. I think that that's what drew so much attention to it. And the fact that, you know, the sheriff himself said that it was one of the worst crime scenes he'd ever seen. And he actually called it a massacre.
Yeah.
So it just was, I think that's what captivated everybody at the very beginning. But on July 22nd at 11 a.m., Sheriff Grady Judd called a press conference. He started out by saying that he believes that Polk County has one of the best homicide units that there is. He stated that in 11 years, they only have two unsolved homicides. He said the homicide team investigated this case as if the victims were their own brothers, and then announced that his team had solved the case. Tony, aka TJ Wiggins, age 26, his brother, William Robert Wiggins, 21, and TJ's girlfriend, Mary Whitmore, age 27, were arrested and charged with the murders of Damian Tillman, Kevin Springfield, and Brandon Rollins. Sheriff Judd showed a picture of all three subjects, pointing to the picture of TJ Wiggins, and called him the trigger man.
When he held the picture up on the TV, he said, "And I want everybody to look at this guy right here." And he made sure everyone knew that this was your guy.
He went on to say that TJ's criminal history should shock your conscience. His first arrest was when he was 12 years old.
12 years old?
Yes. He had 230 felony criminal charges in his arrest history, 15 felony criminal convictions, and had been to state prison twice. He's a thug. He's a criminal. He's pure evil in the flesh. He's loud and he's out of control, Judd said of TJ Wiggins. Mary had no criminal history, and Robert Wiggins has only one misdemeanor arrest on his record. All three are from the Lake Wales and Frostproof area. So when the sheriff's office started receiving tips, hundreds of tips, the predominant information that was received was look at TJ Wiggins, not because there was any evidence against him, but just because of his reputation of being so violent.
Well, I can understand. If you think about that, I'm sure that regardless of what happened in this town, he was the go-to because he was always like on probation or involved with the police. So they had like, I was doing a checkup on you. Hey, while we're here, we want to ask you about this.
Right.
So you know that he was the go-to guy if anything in this town went awry. I mean, that's my own personal opinion. Obviously, it's not fact. But I can just picture, you know, like, hey, my car got stolen. Yeah, you know what? Let's take a ride out and talk to Tony. See if he knows anything. Because if he's not involved in it, he might know about it. So,
right.
Yeah, this guy here just had sort of a, I don't want to say a bad rap because he created this freaking bad rap.
Judd went on to explain that TJ Wiggins was currently out on bond after a felony assault charge wherein he broke a man's arm with a crowbar during a fight. He's wild and hostile, Grady Judd announced. He again mentioned, what's more wholesome than three friends getting together to go fishing?
So Sheriff Judd goes on to give a detailed timeline of the events of July 17th. He says, first, Damien stopped at the Dollar General store. And they knew this because they found a Dollar General store bag in Damien's truck. So they went to the Dollar General and got the surveillance tapes for the night of the murders. They saw Damien standing at the line of the checkout. Now behind Damien in line was Tony, TJ Wiggins, Robert Wiggins, and Mary Whitmore. Now at 9:56, Damien is checking out the Dollar General store. TJ checks out 15 seconds later and follows Damien out the door. At 10:06, which is 10 minutes later, Brandon called his dad for help. Now, Sheriff Judd says they know that Damien drove directly to the lake for the Dollar General store, and on the video, you can see that Damien has some sort of conversation with TJ Wiggins. Now, the video did not have audio, but the body language, it doesn't look like the conversation was not, it was hostile in any way. So it didn't look like it was very hostile. Although there were portions that I guess could be questioned, and there is some speculation that he was kind of like throwing his arms up, like, what's going on? And then you see him like crack his neck.
Yeah.
But he didn't seem like he was like hostile towards Damien.
Right.
But it looked like he was like, oh, you could see he was like getting pumped up, but not, there was like no animosity towards Damien himself.
So on Monday, July 20th, investigators found the suspects at their home. They were living in a rural, wooded, and isolated area. A compound, Judd said, made up of campers and trailers with no electricity or running water.
Can I just set the scene here real quick? When you look at this place,
sure,
it is covered with everything you could think of. I mean, if you've ever had anything stolen, it was probably there at this compound. And I mean, generators, mopeds, scooters, engines, cars, trucks, lifts, anything. It was amazing to see the pictures that they have.
Well, they were using a generator for power, and they were basically living off the grid. Later, it would be reported by ClickOrlando.com that the compound was, quote, the property was like a landfill and covered in human and animal waste.
See? I wasn't the only one that thought that.
While homicide detectives were serving a search warrant for land on Sarver Avenue, near where the victims were found, they observed hazardous conditions and asked for Polk County Environmental Crimes to investigate, according to a news release. They arrested four more people living on the property, 58-year-old Tony Wiggins Sr., 42-year-old Robert Keene, 54-year-old Nydia LeBoy, and 19-year-old Cheyenne Eccleston. They have all been charged with environmental crimes. The camper they were living in had an open septic tank draining into the ground with feces visible on the surface of the ground.
Ugh.
Environmental detectives said the property was covered in tires and broken down vehicles, metals, appliances, and other debris, and compared it to a landfill. Throughout the property, an excessive amount of flies were swarming around the trash, dog feces, and human feces, detectives wrote in the report. Sheriff Grady Judd said the property was unfit for animals, let alone humans. The property where the suspects lived looked like a landfill and has raw sewage all over the ground. It's not only not fit for humans, I wouldn't even let a dog live there, Judd said in a statement. So this would just give you a little bit of an idea of how these people lived and like what kind of people would live like that.
Yeah, that's
like people that just obviously didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why I said if you've ever had anything stolen, it was probably there.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure that they probably did a lot. And obviously we'll get into that, but I'm sure that there was a lot of stuff that they didn't really own that was there. But who the hell's going to come in there?
Yeah. They probably smell it a mile away, turn around.
Exactly. Be like, what? Nope, get out of here. Now, when interviewed, Robert Wiggins and Mary Whitmore consistently lied to protect TJ Wiggins. The only thing they agreed on was that they went to McDonald's and ordered 10 double cheeseburgers and 2 McChicken sandwiches. Now, I want to discuss that for a second. The only reason is because I want to talk about this order. Do you think that this order was to feed everybody at their compound, or do you think this order was to like have some recognition? Like, hey, let's order something weird, like a bunch of food.
Yeah.
So that way they can say, hey, was this guy in here? Oh yeah, I remember those people. They ordered all this food.
Yeah.
So I found it odd that kept coming up.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
I think it was probably a weird order just to make themselves stand out so that like to establish an alibi.
Yeah. Cause I think at some point he said that, we were never there.
Remember? Right.
Yeah. And I think that might be sort of, I don't know. That was just my thought anyway. So the sheriff's office executed a search warrant at the compound the same day of the arrest of TJ and found 2 shotguns and 2 SKS 762 rifles. Now, TJ, being a convicted felon, was arrested immediately because he cannot possess firearms. Now, they found 1 9mm shell casing in TJ's trailer, and the FDLE compared the shell casing found at TJ's house to the casing found at the murder scene, and of course, they matched. All were fired from the same weapon, a 9mm Smith & Wesson. Now, on Tuesday, they brought Robert and Mary back into the sheriff's office. Mary says she knows nothing, although she admitted to buying the ammunition for TJ on July 9th. And Sheriff Judd called her a very mean woman. I love how she's a very mean woman.
Yeah.
That's very Judd-like. When they pressed her for the details of that particular night, she lawyered up. She said, I'd say I'm done. I need a lawyer.
But Robert told investigators when they were in line at the Dollar General, he heard Damien tell the clerk, who Damien obviously knew, that he was going fishing with Kevin and Brandon. Now TJ hears that Kevin is going to be at the lake. When they leave the store, TJ tells Robert to drive to the lake. They had no plans to go to the lake until TJ overheard that Kevin was going to be there.
I wonder if that's the point where he started like cracking his neck. Like, maybe. Oh boy, he was getting fired up.
When TJ, Robert, and Mary arrived at the lake, all three victims were already there. This is in contrast to what was earlier believed that Damien arrived first and the other two victims arrived while Damien was being attacked. Remember we said that in the beginning, that that's what they thought at first?
Originally, yep.
So Sheriff Judd explained that on that evening, Damien was driving his red pickup truck and Kevin and Brandon were in a white pickup truck with Kevin driving. At the lake, they were parked door to door and talking to each other when the three suspects pulled up behind Kevin's white truck. TJ exited the vehicle and rushed up to the truck. Brandon got out to see who it was. TJ pushed Brandon up against the truck and pulled out a gun and said, "Where's Kevin?" So TJ ran around the truck and pointed the gun at Kevin and said, "Where's my truck? Where's my truck? You stole the engine out of my truck." Kevin said he had no idea what TJ was talking about. TJ then hit Kevin. Sheriff Judd described it as a sucker punch. Damien starts to exit his vehicle and is screaming at TJ to put the gun away. TJ starts shooting Kevin and Brandon inside the truck. It's estimated that TJ shot them 9 to 10 times.
Fuck.
He then turns and starts to shoot Damien, and then goes back to Kevin's truck to find a magazine from his gun that he had dropped during all the excitement. Robert stated to investigators that he was in their own truck during the whole ordeal. By the time he realized what was happening and got out of the truck, it was all over. TJ tells Robert to help him put Damien in the truck. So they grab Damien's dead body and hoist him into the back of his own pickup truck, and they all leave.
Well, I have a question, because they said that Judd said that the men were beaten.
Right.
So this is just what Robert is telling the police at this point.
Right.
Okay, I want to clarify, because every time I kept reading some of the stuff, I got lost.
Well, it says that TJ hit Kevin.
Sucker punched Kevin. It said that's just one punch, and then he started shooting. But Judd said that these guys were beaten. So I think that this story is a little more lax than what actually occurred. That's what I was getting at.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to see if you agree with that, or if
I don't have an opinion on that.
Okay.
So the trio then went to an undisclosed location, stripped down the gun, and threw it away. Then they immediately go to McDonald's in Lake Wales and order 10 double cheeseburgers and 2 McChicken sandwiches. While in line at McDonald's, TJ simply said to his companions, "We weren't there."
Yep, like we said earlier.
And that's all the conversation that was had about the murders.
Now that's Robert's story to investigators.
Right. Robert is TJ's younger brother.
Exactly. So he was there, but I just want to clarify that only because to this point, that's the story that really everyone is going on, because everyone's talking about Kevin, you know, Kevin stole the motor or whatever it may be. So that's kind of what we have to go on with the baseline for the story now. Well, the following day, which is Saturday, Robert took the truck they were driving to a car wash to clean off the mud and blood. Now, investigators found trace evidence of blood in the truck where TJ was sitting. So at this point, TJ has been charged with 3 counts of first degree murder. Robert had been charged with 3 counts of accessory to murder and 1 count of tampering with evidence, and Mary with 3 counts of accessory to murder and 1 count of tampering with evidence. And Sheriff Judd said the investigation was ongoing. They planned to get to the bottom of what happened with this truck, that so-called truck that TJ was so angry with Kevin about. In the coming days and weeks, we will sew all the details together, he added. We can't tell you that anything was stolen at this point in the investigation or whether it was just a civil disagreement over property. We are just not far enough in an investigation to discern that.
In true Grady Judd fashion, he called for the execution of TJ Wiggins. He ended his press conference with, "Thank you, God bless you, see you later." In an interview with WFLA, Roland's girlfriend, Jessica Steenson, said, "I'm pissed that my boyfriend was killed over a truck. She added that she will not stop until justice is served for them three boys, my boyfriend and his two best friends. Such a detailed timeline. How did they come up with that?
Yeah, that was like very detailed.
Very detailed. And I just have one question because that's just how my mind works. There's two Dollar General stores in Frostproof, Florida. The first one is located at 2275 Fort Meade Road. And according to Google Maps, it's 6.4 to 6.9 miles depending on the route that they take and a 10 to 12 minute drive away from Lake Streety Road. The second Dollar General is located at 14 Highway 630 East. Now this location is 7.6 to 8.6 miles from the crime scene and would take 13 to 14 minutes to get there. So how did Damien leave the Dollar General at 9:56 p.m. and make it to the lake? All three were attacked and the perpetrators took off all before Brandon called his father at 10:06 p.m.
Well, one of the things that I come up with, and if you do the Google map search, you figure you're a guy that knows this town. You know what I mean? If he's so familiar with it, we're talking about a very small town. This is probably not the first time they've been to Lake Streety. I'm sure that every single time, because guys are very, like me, when I go fishing, I'm very routine oriented. So I do certain things a certain way. So I'm sure that, hey, we're going to go fishing tonight. All right, well, I'll stop here at the store. You stop at Dollar General. You get this. You get this. So they probably stopped. And of course, he's going to haul ass. So he's not going to be doing the 45 miles an hour that your Google map is telling you that it's going to take 12 minutes. He's probably going to take about 8 minutes, maybe seven, because he's going to book through there. You know what I mean? And we're talking about rural roads. So especially guys that, you know, they know the roads. So I could see why.
If it took him 8 minutes, he would still be there, parked door to door with the other two trucks. The perpetrators would pull up. Kevin would have to get out, kill all three of them. Robert would get out of the truck, help Kevin put Damien's body in the back of the truck, and all of this before Damien calls his father. And all of this happens in 2 minutes?
No. Well, see, that's one thing.
That's what I'm saying. This timeline doesn't make sense to
me. Well, one thing that I picked up on is when Brandon's father said that he called, that he could hear commotion in the background, which means everything was still occurring. So the crime had not, well, the crime started the minute he pulled up. But what I'm saying is this is not a 10-minute window. So if Brandon calls his father can hear the commotion in the background. That means that it's just starting to transpire. So he could have gotten in the car to take off to go to where Brandon. He knew Brandon was going to be there because it's probably, again, not something they've done before. All of this could still be occurring by the time Brandon's father shows up. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't pin it down to a 10-minute window where Brandon calls his father when it's over, because he actually called him while it was actually occurring.
Okay.
That's my
guess. That makes more sense.
That's my guess. And that's my I'm not an investigator best guess.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Lauren's basically a detective. I'm basically just a guy. So, I mean, you know, I'm pretty good with that stuff. That's the only thing that I picked up on personally for me that it could have still been happening. Okay. But we're also assuming that the clock is correct at Dollar General.
Right.
So, well, TJ Wiggins made his first court appearance on Thursday, July 23rd, and was denied bond. Asshole. Now, his girlfriend, Mary Whitmore, 27, also appeared and had her bond set at $45,000, an amount reached by adding up $15,000 for each account, which is three accessory to murder charges. And if she posts bond, the Whitmore reportedly must wear a GPS monitor during her release. So even if they come up with the money, she still has to wear a GPS tracker.
I don't think they're going to come up with the money.
Well, what are we looking at? 10%? That's 10%, so it's $4,500?
$4,500, yeah.
Plus collateral, because we're talking about...
Do they have collateral? They live in a...
How much is a camper worth?
A couple thousand, maybe?
Okay, probably not. Now, Robert Wiggins, his bond was set at $46,000, so obviously a little bit different. And I don't think he posted bond.
No. Okay. The death penalty is definitely our number one priority, Dottie Payton, the mother of Brandon Rollins, told ABC Action News. I just don't understand how that many charges, being a convicted felon, and you're out here walking the streets like a normal person, said Payton, talking about TJ and his 230 felony charges and whatnot. So that's a good question. How could TJ, with so many felony charges and convictions under his belt, still be on the street? I don't get that. I don't have an answer for that. Now, Roland's mother, Dottie Payton, told WFLA that she's familiar with TJ Wiggins. I worked at the school many, many years when those kids were very young, and I know them personally. I know their mom, their dad. I know the whole history. I know it all. He's always been a rough kid. He was always in trouble, she said.
Well, let's take a, you brought it up, so let's take a quick deep dive into Tony TJ Wiggins' criminal record. Now, according to Sheriff Judd, TJ Wiggins' first arrest was when he was 12 years old, as Lauren mentioned earlier. Now, obviously, juvenile records are sealed, so we can only go back to 2011 and look at TJ's arrest history from there on. Now, because it's so extensive, I'm just going to give you a list of some of the most serious charges and convictions. And between 2011 and 2020, TJ Wiggins had charges for everything from armed burglary, grand theft, dealing in stolen property, battery on a person 65 years of age or older, dick, and drugs, of course, felony, criminal mischief, and possession of firearms by a convicted felon. And the list just goes on and on and on. So, I mean, that give you kind of an idea of the kind of person he is, which is odd that we bring, now we've got murder charges.
Mm-hmm.
But as we know, anybody that pays attention to true crime in and of itself, you start somewhere and then you grow.
Yep.
You know, these charges, it's like, well, you know, let's push a little bit further, a little bit further. Oh, they're not going to stop me. Look at me. I got 230 arrests.
Well, like,
I got 15
like they,
convictions.
Like they said
the
earlier, he was already out on bond from a felony assault charge where he beat somebody with a chain.
And that was really his first, I don't want to say his first, but that was really the most aggressive charge that he had as far as, you know, because most of them were armed robbery, burglary. I don't want to say aggressive, but that was the first time.
Was it a chain or tire iron or something?
Crowbar.
Crowbar. He beat someone with a crowbar. That's right.
Exactly. So, I mean, you see sort of a. Yeah, I know. There's so many. You see an escalation of that. But I mean, when you start when you're 12 and you get, look where he's living and how he's living.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, like I said, the list goes on and on and on, but. Now, TJ Wiggins actually did prison time from September of 2012 to February of 2014, and he went back to prison again from November of 2015 to March of 2018.
So more information about this triple murder is coming out daily, and like I said in the beginning, I have been creating this outline for this episode in real time. So on Monday, July 27th, The Ledger reported that according to Robert Wiggins' arrest affidavit, remember he's the younger brother of TJ Wiggins.
Little douche.
He watched his brother TJ shoot Brandon Rollins, Kevin Springfield, and Damian Tillman. One bullet hit Rollins in the left shoulder and another in the area of his left collarbone, detective stated, referencing the autopsy. A third bullet hit his right arm, also striking the fingertips on the right hand. Dr. Stephen Nelson, who conducted the autopsy, recovered one projectile from Roland's lower back. Springfield was shot twice, once in the neck and once in the head, the arrest affidavit states. Both bullets passed straight through his body. Tillman, whom Robert Wiggins said was the last to be shot, was hit three times in the chest and once in the right arm. He told investigators that he tried to stop his brother after the first shot was fired. He got out of the white pickup truck they were driving and ran towards TJ to try and stop him, though the shooting was done before he could get to him. Now, this is all according to his arrest affidavit. He also said that he heard his brother repeatedly asking Kevin Springfield, "Where is it?" and Springfield replying that he didn't know what TJ Wiggins was talking about. Detectives had said TJ Wiggins has accused Kevin Springfield, a mechanic, of selling the engine of his truck. Whether this is true or not, we don't know.
So, we know Kevin Springfield was a mechanic.
So, Kevin Springfield was obviously the main target. And Brandon Rollins and Damian Tillman were basically just collateral damage.
Yes.
Which is so sad.
Yeah, it is. But, like, you know, and I'll go ahead and I'm not by no means adding sympathy to any of this. But I got to believe that, okay, so he came after Kevin. So now here's a situation where TJ Wiggins, one man, this is how big of a asshole piece of shit this guy is. One man, T.J. Wiggins, is angry because he feels that he's been wronged by Kevin Springfield. So now he brings his girlfriend, who is a mother of two, by the way. I think she has two children or one child.
I'm not 100% sure.
Anyway, she's a mother. She has children. So he brings her and his little brother to the lake to kill Kevin Springfield, or to engage Kevin Springfield, ultimately killing three people. So now he's basically ruined six lives, three of which he's taken.
Yep.
His, which nobody gives a shit about because the guy is just that person, and two other people. So that's just, that just really frustrates the shit out of me about this whole thing. And honestly, that's one of the things where when I was reading news stories and looking into it, I literally would just have to like turn my head and think, one person has changed the life of six different people, his own, and three, like I said, and because I don't want to say that, I mean, obviously Robert Wiggins was there and so was Mary Whitmore. But because they're covering up for him, because they're probably scared of him.
Probably.
I mean, they fear for their lives, but I'm not going to say that they're innocent in any way, shape, or form. Don't get me wrong. Don't misread what I'm saying. But I feel like if Robert would have said, hey, man, let's just go home, and went home, he could have been hurt by TJ. So he's got to do what TJ says. TJ brings him into the situation. Now here they are.
Yeah.
So that's just how awful this guy is. So. Now, unfortunately, according to the Ledger, the COVID-19 pandemic has shut down all jury activity at the Polk County Courthouse and many others statewide. Now, including grand juries, which are the ones that decide whether to issue the indictment in the first-degree murder cases. And that's the case? So that's...
Yes.
So they need a grand jury.
They're not convening any grand juries right now.
So while murder defendant T.J. Wiggins waits in a jail cell, prosecutors may have to wait weeks to seek an indictment against him?
Yep.
Okay. So as of now in Polk County, that's going to be like mid-September at the earliest?
Yep.
So until an indictment can be issued, prosecutors won't decide whether to seek the death penalty in these pending cases. So how's that work? Can you give me a rundown of how that works?
All right. So in a death penalty case or in a first-degree murder case, you have to have an indictment. That's okay. Not the case with every type of crime. But with the most serious crimes, they get a grand jury together, they present all of the evidence to the grand jury, and then the grand jury decides whether there's enough evidence to indict the defendant. If they do decide that there is enough evidence, the defendant is indicted, and then they proceed with a trial. What's happening here is because of COVID-19, they're not having any grand juries right now. And according to the court administrator, Nick Sudzina, the earliest that they would convene any type of grand jury would be mid-September. So until he's indicted for first-degree murder, they can't come out and say we're seeking the death penalty. And even when he's indicted, they don't immediately have to say that. They have 20 days after the indictment to make the decision whether to seek the death penalty or not. But I feel like in this case, they're going to seek the death penalty.
We're talking about Grady Judd.
Yes.
This is a guy that when he was asked by the reporters why a guy was shot 68 times in the coroner listed as natural causes for his death, he said, well, if you get shot 68 times, naturally, you're going to die.
Yeah.
This is Grady Judd.
This is Grady Judd.
We know that at least we can almost guarantee that for T.J. Wiggins, because I got to believe that T.J. Wiggins has been a thorn in his side since
was 12?
Exactly. But I'm saying, well, since Grady was still wet behind the ears, so to speak, I'm sure this guy's name is all over the place. So I got to believe that's what he's going to go. The other two, he's probably going to go for some serious prison time. But I think TJ is going to be, obviously, we know it's Florida. We don't have Spark anymore. So he's going to be in prison pretty much for the rest of his life.
Right.
Battling for his life, so to speak.
Well, that's where he belongs.
Exactly. So I think that's all we got for tonight. And obviously, if there's updates.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll be doing an update on this someday soon.
I mean, I can almost guarantee you that if this goes any further, or once we get, maybe when this COVID crap is out of the way, I mean, I don't think it's ever going to be out of the way, but if this COVID crap dies down and the court convenes, maybe we can do an update, a quick little update here or there, mm-hmm. and kind of keep people up to date. I'm sure that you'll hear about it, though, if you follow this case.
Yep, and I'll also continue to share things on our social medias and whatnot.
Yep, so... I guess that's all we have for everyone tonight.
Yep. Again, if you'd like to support the show, please subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/Paradise After Dark Podcast.
Check out our Etsy store for some awesome Paradise After Dark gear, which we do have new buffs.
We have new buffs / masks.
Yeah, a.k.a. gators. I guess they call them gators. Somebody said, hey, it's a gator. I'm like, it's a buff.
Oh, G-A-T-E-R.
G, exactly. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, they cover your face, yeah, okay?
We have face coverings.
We have face coverings.
Yeah, check them out. They're pretty cool.
And please make sure to follow us on social media at Paradise After Dark Podcast on Instagram and Facebook and at Paradise Dark 239 on Twitter.
Yeah, please do, because Lauren gets involved in that stuff. So you have a question or anything, Lauren will usually respond to you pretty quickly. So you can also, if you want to get in touch with us, like I said, contact Lauren, or you can email us at paradiseafterdarkpodcast@gmail.com.
And make sure to subscribe and rate and review on whatever platform you're listening.
Stars. We need stars. Give us some stars. What do we want? 5 stars? 10 stars?
What's the best? Would be great.
Five stars?
Yes.
I like 10 stars.
But that's not an option. Five stars is the option.
Find a friend and have them give us 5 stars.
Oh, that's a good way to
give
us 10.
That's a good way to do it. That's it. So anyway, thanks for listening, everyone.
To Paradise After Dark.
Dark, dark.